You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hi, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 109 of the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Today's episode is going to be a Q&A show where I answer your questions and questions from the Facebook group all about New Orleans and this time of year. We're recording this in March of 2020. Before we get to that, I do want to mention last week's show, episode 108. It was my reflections on the Carnival and Mardi Gras season that just passed here in 2020. I got a lot of good responses from it. It was really an interesting Mardi Gras in that we had some tragedies. We had a couple people that were killed when they were run over by parade floats. In a separate parade or another parade, we had a couple riders fall off of floats. All of this was against the backdrop of the Hard Rock Hotel collapse. And yet with all of that tragedy, in many ways, it was a really good Mardi Gras, and I know that sounds weird, but lots of reflections there. It got a lot of positive responses. So if you haven't listened to it, go back and give it a listen. That's the Carnival and Mardi Gras Reflections episode, which was number 108. Today, again, we're gonna take questions and do some answers. I'm on the road at a podcast conference, and I thought it'd be fun to just get some input from our Patreon supporters and our Facebook crew and answer your questions. So before we jump into that, I do want to mention one of the sponsors that makes this podcast possible, and that's Two Chicks Walking Tours. I love the tours offered by Two Chicks, but as much as the tours themselves, I really appreciate the way that my friend Christine Miller has built her business. Christine loves and cares about her customers, the people she works with, and the city of New Orleans, and it really shows when you go on a Two Chicks Walking Tour. In addition to being longtime sponsors of the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast, the crew over at Two Chicks Walking Tours has earned attention in numerous international publications, including things like Glamour magazine, Marie Claire, Harper's Bazaar, the Sunday Times Travel magazine, and U.S. News & World Report. Two Chicks small group tours include the ever-popular Garden District Tour, which I love, their signature tours such as Dead Sexy and Brothels, Bordellos, and Ladies of the Night, and their classic French Quarter and St. Louis Cemetery tours. They also offer private tours that can be customized just for your group. Two Chicks employs guides that are published authors, local artists, and are really just engaged New Orleanians. Whatever you choose, you're going to be in great hands, and you're going to have a wonderful time. Use code BEYOND and save 15% over at twochickswalkingtours.com. All right, let's get into our questions. We've done a handful of Q&A episodes, which I'll put in the links to today's show, which will be over at beyondbourbonst.com/109, and we'll figure all that out and give you links. These are really good ways to kind of get a sort of a random assortment of questions answered about New Orleans. As always, we start with our Patreon supporters, so if you're interested in supporting us that way, you can check it out at the website, beyondbourbonst.com/109, or you can go to Patreon and look for the Beyond Bourbon Street crew. But they get first choice. So first up, the first question comes from Sean B. Hey, Mark, my wife and I visit every year in September. We like to have the city to ourselves when there's not a large festival going on, but we do like local activities. Any festivals or events off the top of your head in mid-September? Well, thanks for the question, Sean. But you sort of pointed out, you choose a time of year that doesn't have a lot of festivals. And so when you do that, you do tend to get fewer crowds. If you like football, you might check out the New Orleans Saints schedule. I would go check out the WWOZ Second Line schedule. Second lines are usually held in the city on Sundays. And so that's obviously a lot of fun and interesting. And I would go take in some live music. Go look again at Offbeat or WWOZ's websites and check out some music that you might like. There's also, and I think it runs at least through September, at Rockin' Bowl on Tuesday nights, they have Latin Night, so that's something different to do. Again, embrace the fact that there are not festivals and things and go explore. Maybe go on a Two Chicks Walking Tour or do some of the other tours we've talked about on the show. That's a beautiful time of year in September. It's sometimes hot, but just starting to cool off. It's a good time to go explore the Sculpture Garden in City Park, It's a good time to go explore Magazine Street. The French Quarter won't be super crowded like it is, say, during the French Quarter Festival. So embrace the fact that there aren't festivals going on and go do some of those kind of things. Again, it would also be a good time to go take, if the ferry is running, and it's been off and on, the Canal Street ferry as I record this, be a good time to go do something like that. Thanks for the question, Sean, and for your support. Next up, we have another question from a Patreon supporter, Eric Andres. And I should say, I don't really read these ahead of time, so I tend to just read them as we go. Since New Orleans has always taken the laid-back approach to life with merrymaking and an easygoing attitude, how does this culture fit in with the corporate or the working world? Are shifts not as defined with start and finish times? Is it understood that people are not going to be around during Carnival? And is it treated differently than typical PTO vacation? And then last, he says, when you moved away, did you notice a difference in work ethic and how did you adapt? So New Orleans is called the Big Easy. I do think in very broad general terms, the pace of life, the pace of business is sometimes a little slower here than maybe in some northern places. I think that we do a good job of balancing, though. We really do try to live life and balance getting work done and doing good work, but also enjoying all these things that are available to us. I think that sometimes when people move to New Orleans, they have a hard time with that. On the flip side, New Orleanians are very friendly, and sometimes we'll even take offense if you don't sort of acknowledge someone on the street or say hi or at least smile. In terms of Mardi Gras is an interesting time in the work environment. Lots of people take off. The week of Mardi Gras is generally a holiday, like an early spring break for the schools. And so that causes some disruption. You know, either families are maybe going out of town or they're having to take off to take care of the kids or make arrangements. You know, there's sort of like mini camps sometimes for a couple of days at the schools. And a lot of people do take vacation. So at least as I put on my daytime hat, it's something we have to budget for and account for and really think about, that it's a high period of leave usage. Beyond that, and I am in my hotel room, and there's a reminder that I have to get out of my hotel room soon. Beyond that, people are just fatigued. So I worked all through Mardi Gras, not on Mardi Gras Day or not much on Mardi Gras Day, but you're tired. You're out. If you have a family, everybody's out of their routine. It is hard to get around the city, so that slows things down. You know, I do think if you were coming from, say, a place like New York or Chicago, you would definitely feel a difference. I also think that we really do try to enjoy life and keep that balance, right? In terms of when I moved away, did I notice a difference? Probably one of the biggest differences I noticed is that, and I won't get into it, but the first place I moved away, people were nice, but they just weren't as friendly or as welcoming to a stranger, to an outsider, which I was. The other thing is, and this was a long time ago, but I think it's still true today, nobody really blinks if you have a drink at lunch, right? I mean, not in the workplace, but if you go out for lunch and you have a drink, it's getting less common, but it's certainly not uncommon. And in most of the other places that I've lived, people would frown if you have a drink at lunch in the middle of a work day, right? And so I think that's just kind of a bit different. I don't know that I would agree or characterize that the work ethic is different in different places. I worked in Washington, D.C. for many years, and people worked really long hours. But when you work long hours, I still feel like you're sort of pacing yourself. You're just spreading your energy over more hours. So I think, you know, the people I work with today, both in terms of my day job and in terms of the podcast, people work really hard. And in some cases, I would argue that people really work hard so that they can play hard here. And there is an awareness that, gosh, we want to do Mardi Gras, and we want to go to Jazz Fest, and we want to enjoy all the festivals and all the music. And so you have to really make an effort to get everything done that you need to do and also still enjoy life. In any event, I think it's a great problem to have. But certainly you notice it at Mardi Gras with the vacation and people, you know, spring break is a different time in New Orleans than it is in many places. So thanks, Eric, for the support and for the question. Now we'll move on. The next place that I get questions for a Q&A show like this is our Facebook group, which is the Beyond Bourbon Street Crew, K-R-E-W-E. We're at almost 5,000 members, and it's a real community. You can go in and share your experiences of New Orleans, or you can help answer questions from other people. I'm certainly in there a good bit, but it's really a community that we keep it very focused on New Orleans. So if you're listening to this and you either want to share your experiences with about New Orleans, or you have questions, or you're planning a trip and want to get some advice from others, we also get lots of questions about moving to New Orleans, and that's a good resource. So let's jump in there. I think this we'll count this as about question number 3. Matt May says, what's been the most unexpected things you've experienced with the growth of the podcast? I think it's a community, Matt. I did not, when I started the show, I knew I wanted it to be about you, the listener, but I also just didn't, I wasn't sure who would listen. And as it continues to grow, and it takes a leap every couple of months where we see a big increase, we run into people more and more. So people will say, hey, are you Mark? Or, you know, my wife rolls her eyes. But getting to meet more people, and I don't know that I thought about that you know, people would recognize me when I go around town. I think the other thing is it has been, I grew up in a small business, and this has been a real opportunity to connect small business owners, not only with you as a listener, but with each other. So small business owners have their head down, and you know this, Matt. You work with Chad over at Canoe and Trail. The small business owners just have their head down, trying to do a good job and serve their clients, and they often don't realize there's another complementary business nearby. And as I interview people in disparate sort of business lines, I'm able to connect people, and given that I grew up in a small business, I love that. One of the examples, and neither of these, well, one of the examples is that I've gotten to know Kevin Pito over at Coast Roast Coffee. We did an episode a couple back with Kevin, and also another one with Shelby Westfeld. And I asked Kevin if he knew Jackie and John over at NOLA T-Shirt Club of the Month, just a couple blocks away from his new store magazine, and he didn't. So they've now connected, and they have a lot of synergy, a lot of things that they can kind of cross-promote. And I think if you like one of, if you like the products of one of those stores, you'll like it from the other. And it's because they both, the way they run their businesses are very similar. And then I did the same thing again with Chop Industries. Patty Dunn was a guest way back on one of the small business episodes. And Kevin has an excess of coffee sacks. And he and I were talking one day, and he said, gosh, I don't know what to do with these. And I said, hey, do you know Patty? Patty makes these incredible bags. And by the way, she likes to use reclaimed materials. And so they've worked together and done a couple things. So to me, maybe that's the most unexpected thing, Matt, the way I've been able to bring together business members of the community. And that's really fun, and that's led to some partnerships for me. In the Facebook group, we just announced something called the Beyond Bourbon Street Partners Program. But that's really like another level of community for me. So that's what I'm going to go with. Let's see. Number, we'll call this 4, I think. Una Pavlik. I hope I'm saying your name right, correctly, Una. Not spring and summer event related, but I always wondered if there was really a curse on Jane Mansfield that caused her to die in an accident. I read somewhere that she survived 7 car accidents prior to the one that killed her in New Orleans. I don't know. That's an interesting question. But for other listeners, Jane Mansfield was killed in Slidell, which is a suburb on the way to Mississippi of New Orleans. She had done a show and was with, I think, a business manager and one other adult, and then 3 of her kids that were in the back seat, and they were coming back late at night from Biloxi on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And basically, as I understand it, they ran right into the back of an 18-wheeler that sliced the top off of the car and killed her, all 3 adults. I don't know if the children were killed. There's a marker, which I understand is just sort of like a simple marker on the side of the road. And for a long time, it was placed at the wrong place. So I don't know if she was cursed, but there's an interesting result. Their 18-wheelers now have a bumper or device. I think they actually call it the Mansfield device, that prevents cars from doing that, from running right under, right up the back of an 18-wheeler and underneath it. So I don't know much more about it, except that's an interesting sort of legacy of that tragic accident. Number 5, Alicia Biersack. Not related to spring and summer, but what are the best places in the city to enjoy the weather before it gets too hot? My mom and I are coming down in April, and if there's one thing she wants to do, it's soak up the sun. It could be any kind of activity. You know, for me, City Park is wonderful, even when it is hot. But a time like April is a nice weather time. It's right before it gets super hot here in New Orleans. And you can take in the Sculpture Garden, which is probably my favorite thing or my number one recommendation in the city right now. You can have beignets there in the park at Café du Monde. You can go explore the oldest oak trees in the city in the park right behind the area where Café du Monde is. I also think in the French Quarter, you can wander in and out of places, and really, when the weather's nice, you can go sit on the river, and if it gets a little warm, you can wander into places like the Historic New Orleans Collection, or go take in the Cabildo or the Presbyterian, duck in the St. Louis Cathedral. So I think there ends up being a decent amount of shade and a decent amount of breeze in the French Quarter because of the proximity to the river. But my first choice would be City Park. The other thing is it's a good time of year to hop on the streetcar, the St. Charles streetcar, where the windows roll down. Incidentally, that's a difference. The red streetcars have air conditioning, but the windows don't go down. The green ones don't have air conditioning, and they're the older ones, and so the windows do go down. So I think that's what I would do. If the weather's nice, I'd go hang out in the Sculpture Garden, wander through City Park. We've done a couple of episodes about City Park and one not that long ago, specifically about the Sculpture Garden. And then the other option would be spend some time in the French Quarter and just kind of go in and out as the weather and your energy allows. Thanks for that. Question number 6 comes from Maurice Rawls, actually my Aunt Mo. So hi, Aunt Mo. What about a progressive dinner featuring at least 2 restaurants? I think I would do that on Magazine Street. I might go to Grigri, so down towards the Lower Garden District end, the Irish Channel, even lower than the Irish Channel end of Magazine Street. I might go have a bite or two at Grigri in the bar upstairs. And so that could be, they have a good Caesar salad, they have a terrific gumbo, they have a fried oyster salad, they have their version of a BLT, which I think uses pork belly. So I might go get an appetizer there. And then I might go to the Munch Factory, which is maybe 2 blocks away, and in many respects is much more casual. But don't let the casualness fool you. They have really great food there. They have a roast beef debris over grits that is incredibly good. It doesn't sound like much, but then when you get it, there are so many layers and flavors. So I might do that. That would be a good pairing. If you went completely on the other side of town, I know, Aunt Mo, one of your favorite restaurants is Brightson's, which is one of my favorites. You could certainly go to Brightson's, and then where could you go from Brightson's? You could go along Oak Street and maybe get a drink, which is not really a dessert, but that might be a way to pair it. Another option, easy option, would be on Carrollton Avenue. You could go to Venezia's, an old line Italian restaurant, and have dinner, and then you could go get dessert at Broccata's almost next door. And or right in that same area, you could get boiled seafood at Klessy's or at Bevy Seafood, or reverse them and maybe go get boiled shrimp at one and boiled crawfish at the other. But if I had to pick one, I think I would do the Magazine Street, because you could do Grigri and Munch Factory walking. And then if you wanted to drive just a little bit uptown, you could go to Vintage and get beignets, and they have a bunch of different kinds of beignets there. So that's what I would do. Thanks, Aunt Mo, for the question. Next up is Eli Haddo, who has a bunch of questions, and I think this starts with, we'll call this number 7. Eli says, when does it get hot? It feels like it gets hot right at Jazz Fest. Last weekend in April, first weekend in May. If it's not hot that first weekend, it's hot by the second, and if it's not hot by then, by the next week. So I think your last chance for relatively cool weather runs out right about the start of Jazz Fest. Number 8, how long can you eat crawfish? For several hours. Ba-dum-bum-ch. Crawfish season starts up right around the holidays, right around Christmas, and it generally goes just a little bit past Jazz Fest, right? So you can have crawfish into May. Usually by June, it's trickling away, and if it's left by July 4th, that's the very outer edge. But as it gets hot, crawfish season dies off. It feels like, to me, crawfish season usually peaks right at Jazz Fest. Number nine, Eli's got a bunch of questions here, and I'm going to spoil this in a minute. Is Jazz Fest just jazz, and does Jazz Fest even have jazz? So I think we've done a couple episodes about Jazz Fest and are maybe due for another, but the short answer is the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival does have jazz, and it's not just jazz. And sometimes purists will complain about that. There's big acts, like this year, I think the Foo Fighters are scheduled to perform, and people will say, well, that's not jazz. But the reality is those big names that draw in hundreds of thousands of people enable the organizers to have a budget to pay the smaller bands. There, at Jazz Fest alone, there is the traditional jazz tent. There is a jazz and blues tent, and then I would argue the gospel tent sometimes has a lot of jazz. There is a stage inside, sort of surrounded by the fairgrounds, the actual grandstands, that has a lot of jazz. So there's a ton of jazz at Jazz Fest, and yet it's not purely jazz. And while some people disagree, I think that's perfectly acceptable. And the reality is, if you didn't have those big acts, the organizers wouldn't be able to bring in so many local acts, including jazz musicians. So, you know, I am a big proponent. I really love Jazz Fest, and I think there's a ton of jazz and there's a ton of other music, and that's exactly how it should be in my book. It's interesting. There's a ton of overlap between French Quarter Fest and Jazz Fest in that at the French Quarter Festival, you pretty much have to be a New Orleans artist, maybe a Louisiana artist, but it's pretty tight. There's very rarely anyone from out of state involved. And Jazz Fest includes almost all those same performers, plus performers from all over the country and sometimes all over the world. And so if you think about it from those musicians' perspectives, because of the big non-jazz musicians performing, hundreds of thousands of people over those 2 weeks get exposed to these local artists. And those artists couldn't get that kind of exposure without it. So that's a very long sort of rant, but Jazz Fest is not just jazz, and it does have jazz. I have no idea. I think we're up to nine questions now. We'll call it nine. Where can one sit outside and lounge about, and where can you drink outside? I mean a bar, because obviously you can drink everywhere in New Orleans. When the weather's nice, Bacchanal down in the Bywater is a pretty nice spot to enjoy live music most afternoons and have a glass of wine. There's lots of little courtyards here and there. Also down in that area, the Bywater, is Parlo Beer Lab, which has a kind of a backyard that's really nice. I'm a big, big fan of Avenue Pub uptown, Polly Watts Bar on St. Charles Avenue. They have a terrific two spaces. They have a little courtyard in the back, and they have upstairs, they have a balcony that looks out over St. Charles Avenue, so you can see the streetcars. That's a really great place to drink outside, and typically when I think drink outside, I think it's even better when it's day drinking, right? The Tin Roof Bar, Hot Tin Roof Bar, up on the top of the Pontchartrain Hotel, probably has the best view of this city, and that's a great place. So I would look at rooftop bars and some of those beer places that I just mentioned, but there's no shortage, right? We could probably do a list of 100 places to sit outside and drink. In terms of lounging about without a drink, again, I'll come back to the Sculpture Garden. That is such a beautiful, relaxing place to just hang out and be. So that's what I would say. Let's see. Eli mentions question 10. What are some festivals that don't have a $90 admission fee? You know, actually, most of them. So you're referring to the Jazz and Heritage Festival, which is one of the more expensive festivals. And I would say, even though it's pricey, I think it's worth it. You can be there for 8 hours. You can actually get in a little earlier, but 8 hours of music, access to terrific food, terrific history, exhibits. But I get it. That's expensive, and a lot of people can't do it. I think almost every festival, there are only a couple that are more expensive than that. And you have festivals almost every week of the year that are free or very low admission. You have lots of festivals on the square at Lafayette Park, Lafayette Square, right across from Gallier Hall in the Central Business District. You have things that are held at the at City Park. So there's an SPCA-sponsored event every year that's a beer tasting and music event. You have the Gumbo Festival, and many of these are either free or very low, $10. Bayou Boogaloo is, I think now they have a paid option. It's still not that much. Oak Street Po' Boy Festival is free, or you can pay a small fee. I think it's $5 or $10 to skip some of the lines. So the reality is, the ones that are on the higher end, let's see, the Taco Festival is a pretty high admission, but includes unlimited food and booze. You have Jazz Fest. You have my favorite event of the year, Boudin Bourbon and Beer, is over $100. But again, you're getting food from something like 60 or 70 of the best restaurants and unlimited beverage and terrific music. Coming up is the Hogs for the Cause, which is certainly less than that. I forget the pricing structure these days, but I want to say a single day ticket maybe starts at about $25. So there's plenty of them there. I hope that helps, Eli. Eli says, what's going on at the New Orleans Historic Collection? And that is a loaded question because my friend Eli works at the Historic New Orleans Collection. They are just ending an exhibit about sports in New Orleans. I don't know what the next exhibit is. They have lots of permanent exhibits at the Historic New Orleans Collection, including in their newest building. They kind of have this immersive collection that takes you through the French Quarter and 300 years of the French Quarter. We're just past 301 years since New Orleans was founded, and that's an interesting, it's interactive, lots of displays, lots of things to touch and see. Interesting way for the kids to explore as well as adults. But I don't know, Eli, you'll have to tell me. And rumor has it that the Historic New Orleans Collection might be partnering with us a little more closely soon. So hopefully more to come on that. That's also a good segue. When you are coming to town and you want to go to a place like the Historic New Orleans Collection, or you want to do some of the things we're talking about today, you need a place to stay, right? And that's where the old number 77 Hotel and Chandlery comes in. Longtime listeners have heard me talk about it, and there's good reason for it. The old 77 is in a great location in the Warehouse District. It's just 3 blocks from the French Quarter, and I love it because there's a variety of rooms, including pet-friendly rooms, rooms with no windows, which might seem weird, but if you've been out all night, you might want that. They have artist loft, artist-curated suites, so they have local art in them. They even have an artist-in-residence program, which is pretty cool. Not to mention, they have an award-winning restaurant downstairs, Compère Le Pen. The old number 77 is in a building that dates to the 1850s. And when you think about that, French was still a very common language in the streets of New Orleans. And that's right around when the crew of Comus formed the first Mardi Gras parade in New Orleans in 1857. The old 77 has done a great job of kind of incorporating the old and the past. It's called a chandlery because in various stages of its life, that building was a coffee warehouse, as we learned back when we talked with Shelby Westfeldt, and also a chandlery, which was sort of a general store. And they honor that tradition today where inside the hotel, right when you come in to the right, and also along in their art studio or art gallery, they sell products by local makers and artisans. Really in honor of that tradition and in keeping with the connection to New Orleans. It's what I love about them. They also have a great rotating art exhibit that's free. It's in like kind of a long L-shaped hallway, and it's put together by the people at Wear Your Art. That's kind of especially fitting because now they sometimes call the Warehouse District the Art District or Arts District. I just love, as you can tell, it's a good fit. So many of the people listening to the show, including perhaps you, have been there, have stayed there. I just believe in them. I believe in the way they do things. And it's just a few blocks from the French Quarter. So if you want to go visit Eli at the Historic New Orleans Collection, you want to go wander the French Quarter and get some beignets, whatever it is, it's convenient. The old number 77 is located at 535 Chapultepec Street. And if you use code BBOLD77 when you book a room, you can save 25%. Plus, you get a bit of Lagniappe, a little something extra, in the form of a $10 credit at Tootlaw for coffee and pastries in the morning. I have stayed at the Old 77. I have had the coffee and pastries. It's a good way to jumpstart your day. So with that, let's jump back and see. We have maybe just a couple more questions, and that's good because someone's knocking, I think indicating it's about time for me to leave this room. Kim Worley says, where may I find people or resources who know something about Italian immigrants in New Orleans in the late 1800s, early 1900s? So I have on the schedule to get together with Justin Nystrom, who is a professor at Loyola and has written a book about Sicilian immigrants in New Orleans and specifically their impact on our food. That includes my own family. My family came from Palermo and was very involved in New Orleans food. Many of you know that my family owned a restaurant for 36 years here in New Orleans, but other parts of our family were involved in the wine business, I think the spaghetti business. It was very common in the French Quarter. There was sort of a little Italy, little Sicily part of the quarter with corner stores. The most famous one that still exists, of course, is Central Grocery with their terrific muffalatas. So Justin's a good resource, and again, I'm going to get him on as soon as we can get the scheduling straight. And right around the corner from the Old 77 is a place called the American Italian Cultural Center. It's at 537 South Peters. So the Old 77's at 535 Chapitulas. So basically they are a block away from each other. And in between the two, I believe, is the Piazza d'Italia. And so if you could walk straight through the fountain, you could get from one to the other. But those two, the American Italian Cultural Center combined with Justin's book, which again, we'll talk about on an upcoming episode, are probably the two resources. Also, we're here in March of 2020, and if you look, I think Marie, my wife, just recently posted in our Facebook group a listing of St. Joseph's Day altars. So, you know, big Sicilian heritage, big Italian heritage here in New Orleans, and there are lots of public altars to go visit. So much more to come. That's a timely question, Kim. Thank you so much. Jamie Pello says, what's happening on or around Easter? My pops and dad showed us around New Orleans in 2016. We fell in love with it. We're coming back in Easter for our son's 21st birthday. Of course, going to do Bourbon Street, but really hoping to appreciate the history and richness as much as we do. So there's a couple of parades. Chris Owens, who is about a 150-year-old burlesque dancer, has her own Easter parade that is terrific. There's also a gay Easter parade. Lots of Easter brunches and things like that. And I'd go back and listen to, you've been a couple times, you might listen to some of our more recent episodes about things I would do in New Orleans right now. Again, I've mentioned this several times today, but the Sculpture Garden. Easter is still in that time when the weather's typically really, really nice, still a little bit cool. So that's what I would do. I would get out and explore, maybe go to the Historic New Orleans Collection, take in one or both of those Easter parades, and maybe a nice Easter brunch. Casey Stone Garcia, will you be going to Jazz Fest? And what's your favorite fest food and stage? So assuming, again, it's March of 2020, assuming the festival doesn't get interrupted by the coronavirus, yes, I will definitely be there. I love, love, love Jazz Fest. I get out there as many days as I can. My favorite stage, if I could only stay at one, would be the Fado Do stage. So that's a stage that's usually sponsored by the Sheraton. It has been for many years. It's a smaller stage behind the Congo Square stage, and it tends to feature, as the name Fado Do would imply, Cajun and Zydeco music. If I could only pick one stage for the rest of my life, that would be it. So many good bands, a pretty good variety. It's small enough that even if you're quote-unquote back, you're not far from it. Lots of dancing. It's a good place to learn Cajun dancing. You just have to look for an old Cajun man or woman, and they'll grab your hand and you can start dancing. So I really like that one. That's my favorite stage, although I enjoy wandering around quite a bit. My favorite food would have to be the Natchitoches meat pies. They come in three flavors. They come in broccoli and cheese, in case you don't like meat, crawfish, and of course, like a spicy meat pie, which is a combination of ground meats. My family knows this well. I, for years, have... There's usually an over-under in my family about how many I will eat over the course of Jazz Fest. That number is usually set around 9 or 10, and I'm usually right in there if we go 4 or 5 times to Jazz Fest. For many years, I would wear cargo shorts and bring aluminum foil and line the pockets of the cargo shorts so that I could get four or five meat pies at once and put them in the cargo pockets and keep them warm. It turns out I'm not the only one that does stuff like that. If you ask the folks at the meat pie station, they will tell you people bring Tupperware, they bring boxes, they bring all kinds of things. People like to take the pies home. Although I'm not that, I don't think I'm that patient. I don't have that much self-control. I look forward to them and I eat them there. So that's my favorite. In recent years, I have had fewer of them as I get a little bit older. But I will definitely be going to Jazz Fest. If we have Jazz Fest, I'll be spending a lot of time at the Fado Dose stage and I'll be eating maybe more than one meat pie. Thanks, Casey. We got one or two more questions. Angie Young says, if you're a resident in the French Quarter, are there car garages where you can rent spots to ensure your car is safe and sound? That's a good question in the group. I know at least one person in this in our community, John Jacobson, lives in the French Quarter. Some people, although not many, some have off-street parking. So sometimes behind those gates are courtyards that have a little bit of parking. So that's one way to do it. There are a few parking lots kind of not that far away, and I think a lot of residents in the French Quarter either choose to sort of play the parking game where you're moving the car around, or they choose not to have a car. So I think it's a little bit of a combination. If you were going to live in the French Quarter, I think you typically either make a decision that you can do without a car, or you pay quite a premium and try to find one that has a spot. But there are some lots where you could go park, I think, and leave a car long term. Again, maybe that's a question, John, when you hear this, if you have any experience and can share that, maybe share that in the group. And the last question I have, not really a question, but Lori Romanowski says, I just glanced at this and I thought it said Muffalata Expo and I was really excited. Well, it turns out there is a Muffalata Festival. It's held in Metairie, which is a suburb at a place called Norjo's, an Italian grocery store right off Metairie Road. I think, Lori, it's in October. They've had it for 2 or 3 years, so that, you know, it's not quite an expo, but it is a festival, so you might want to check that out. Well, that's, I think, 12 or 13 questions. That's a good range of different topics. I hope that's helpful for you. I appreciate everyone that supports me on Patreon and the Facebook community that gave me all these questions. It's a fun way to sort of challenge me and how I think about the city and just kind of current events and what you are thinking about in terms of what you want to know. If you're enjoying the show, if you want to be a part of the community, please consider joining our Facebook group or supporting us on Patreon.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.